And we welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the final edition of the, what we would call the traditional first half, even though the Cardinals are already to game 88, so they're well past the halfway point. I'm your host, Daniel Shopdal, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter, and with me as always, Tara Wellman from Birds on the Black End, at Tara Wellman on Twitter. And the Cardinals wrap up their first half, as we noted today, with a 1-0 loss to the Giants. That was about as frustrating as, well, it's hard to say. There's been so many frustrating losses this year that it's hard to say.
Hard to pick just one.
Yeah, it is. But if you want to take anything positive out of this, Jack Flaherty pitched 7 innings. He took a no-hitter into the 7th. He gave up only 2 hits, one of which probably could have been ruled an error because it was in Paul DeJong's glove. He just didn't quite hold on to it. The other one was quite obviously a hit since it landed in the bleachers, which is obviously Jack Flaherty's issues. But I guess the question, Tara, is this one game, or is he turning the corner? I think this team has turned so many corners, they've come back to where they started. But, you know, is he starting to kind of understand what he has?
They're back to where they started, or they just keep making the same wrong turn over and I'm not sure. But yes, they seem to turn a corner and then turn right back around and go the other direction again. Mm-hmm. So as far as Jack is concerned, man, it's good to see him pitching like we know he's capable of. I think we've seen glimpses of it this season. But you're right, he hasn't really been able to replicate that and to do it consistently at all. You mentioned the home runs that have been a problem for him. And that has been really a product of his stuff not being what it can be. He hasn't been sharp with anything. The slider doesn't have the movement that made him such a splash last season. And when that slider flattens out and he doesn't really have a whole lot to offer on his other pitches as far as, you know, finding the strike zone, things like that, he just makes it so difficult on himself to get outs and to get deep into games. We've seen him walk so many guys. We've seen him, you know, with 3-2 pitches that weren't even close. Like, it wasn't even competitive. And we've seen him walk in runs. We've seen him give up multiple home runs in an inning. So it's just, I mean, his stuff hasn't been right. The slider in particular has not been what it can be, but his command on anything else hasn't been good either. So I don't know that it's necessarily a game that we can kind of hang our hats on and say, oh, well, there he is. There's Jack Flaherty. He knew he'd show up at some point. But I do think it's significant. And I think it's significant for a couple of reasons. One, because, you know, kind of proved to himself, hey, this is still in there. But two, I think his last start came right after the loss of Tyler Skaggs, who was a close friend of Jack Flaherty's, to kind of rein in that emotion and to pitch the way that he did. I know it wasn't a great start for him, and there were moments that he looked probably as bad as he has all season, but in the end, it wasn't his worst start of the year, for whatever that's worth, to kind of just, I don't know, go through something like that. Maybe allows for a little bit of perspective. And Jack, to me, is such a competitor that he could very easily compound the pressure on himself after a sequence of bad starts like he's had in this first half, to the point where he almost can't get out of his own way. Mm-hmm. And whether it's losing confidence in his stuff, or if it's losing confidence in his ability to adjust on the fly, or if it's just he can't, like I said, get out of his own way enough to sort of hit that reset button, whether it's in between starts or in between innings or even in between pitches, like we see guys do who are at the top of their game. He wasn't able to do that. So certainly that has to be on his mind as far as, you know, the trying to deal with a loss like that. I mean, there's no way to process that. That is, I don't know, that probably feels right. But to gain some perspective may in some way allow him to let baseball just be baseball, because life is life and they're not necessarily on equal planes. So I'm sort of stumbling a little bit because I'm in no way trying to say that this is a good thing for Jack Flaherty. But I do think that sometimes you go through something like that and it can just kind of be a reminder that, like, it's okay. If you're having a rough first half, it's fine. It doesn't mean you're incapable. Just sort of go back to doing what you know how to do. And you can allow yourself to do that while you allow yourself to deal with the real life stuff. So all the way around, good to see Jack rebound like he did today. Certainly will be, I think, telling to see how he goes forward from here and, you know, what he does with that memory and with that experience and I don't know, in a way honoring the friendship that he had and the the work that the two of them put in together, being, you know, both from California, pitching together or working together when they did, and all of those hours spent trying to perfect this craft.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, I get what you're saying. Of course, it's also, I mean, we said a lot of the similar things about Carlos Martinez a number of years ago,
yeah,
after the loss of Oscar Tavares, and, you know, well, you know, so you never know. I mean, you never know how things are going to be, and it is, as you said, a reminder that the baseball is baseball, and it's not the end of the world if things go badly. And we'll and hopefully, like I said, maybe we'll see if he takes that forward. And if he does, or if he doesn't, that, you know, he's going to be dealing with that grief for a while anyway, in one way, in one form or fashion. And we'll just have to see how that goes. Maybe we should dance and push ourselves away from that dangerous topic now. But and let's talk a little bit about this whole rotation, because the consistency we would like to see is not there in them either. And we have kind of had this all year long, but I think it's kind of flaring up even more now. I mean, you had Flaherty's good start today, but like you said, last time out was rough. The last few times even before that were not necessarily great. You have Miles Michaelis, who can put together like about three good starts and then get beat up. You know, the Giants got him for, hey, granted, he had some defensive lapses behind him, but still, he allowed the grand slam and didn't get deep into a game. Michael Wacha goes from maybe he's turning a corner, whatever, to then going like three innings against another team. You know, really, honestly, amazing to say, but probably the most consistent pitcher right now is Adam Wainwright. You know, because it feels like if you had to put money down on somebody to give you a quality start right now, the safest bet would be Adam Wainwright, because it seems like that's what he does right now. He may not be dramatic, he may not be overly exciting, but, you know, he seems to be able to give you two or three, you know, limit the team to two or three runs over six or so innings and keep you in the ball game, and that's not what we can say about everybody else, and that is probably a problem.
Yeah, well, I think we always thought Adam Wainwright was one of the question marks on this team. Right now, he's the only thing that's not a question mark, and that's certainly not what we expected, but I also think to some degree, it shouldn't be that big of a surprise. Adam Wainwright has been telling everyone for years, just wait, I'm going to show you. It was only a matter of time before he got it right one time. No, but it's great. And I think, you know, the trick has been, this is why it was so hard for me to kind of set any sort of expectations for Waino over the offseason, because the trick has always been, is he healthy? If he's healthy, he's still Adam Wainwright. Like, you don't forget how to be Adam Wainwright on the mound. You just maybe don't have the physical ability to always do what you've always done. And his limitations because of the injuries are so clear now based on what he's been able to do. And for him to go out and, you know, I'm just looking at it, he's allowed two or three runs in his last four starts. Of course, the eight innings of shutout baseball against the Cubs back at the start of the month. May was a little less successful, but, you know, it was for everyone. He's gotten really better and better as the season has gone along, and I think a lot of that is just the confidence that he has in his ability to still compete at this level. So I think we saw early on a little bit of Adam Wainwright being hesitant, which I think we talked about, and I know I talked about it a couple of times, that it's weird to see Adam Wainwright feel like he needed a confidence boost or he needed a vote of confidence from Jack Flaherty. Like, all of a sudden, Adam Wainwright wasn't the leader of the rotation in his ability to go to a guy and say, look, you know, you got this. You know how to go out there and get outs. And maybe he was still doing that, but he wasn't able to provide that same confidence boost for himself. So I think as he's gone throughout the season, he's gotten stronger because he's been able to see that he can compete. He can get big league outs. He can do it at home. He can do it on the road. He can do it against the best teams in the league. He can do it against teams that maybe aren't that competitive this year. So I think it's been really fun to see this version of Adam Wainwright grow a little bit more confident with every start and look more and more like the old Adam Wainwright, not like the old guy on the team, but like the old from the past version of Adam Wainwright, who does pretty incredible things and does it on a consistent basis. I don't want to think about where this rotation would be right now without him being what he is. You know, if he continued to be what he was off and on in that first 6 weeks, where he'd look great and then he'd look pretty terrible and then he'd look great and then he hasn't been, you know, necessarily ace-like, but he's been better than I think most people expected, and certainly better than most of the rest of the rotation has in the last month. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's and so that really kind of leads to the question: what did the Cardinals do? I mean, we've talked about this at least somewhat over the last couple of weeks, because the issues, well, they don't seem to be solving themselves. But the offense, for whatever its problems may be, and we'll get to those in a little bit, is a situation where it's difficult to see that you can change it from the outside just because of the contracts and the issues of the, you know, who you've got in this lineup. So, I mean, does Mozeliak, with the finality of the July 31st deadline, and only deadline this year, does he push some chips in and get some sort of a big starter? Maybe it's when we saw Madison Bumgarner, we also saw him take a ball off his elbow, which can't help his trade value.
And then stay in the game, at least for a quick minute.
Because
he's Madison Bumgarner.
And, you know, it's like Adam Wainwright kind of a thing. Adam would try to do that as well. But, you know, if it's somebody like that, I mean, or do they just... I don't know. What do you think?
You know, I sort of made this comparison before we started recording, and I'm going to use it again. But John Mozeliak is kind of like me when I go to a restaurant with friends. I always want to be the last one to order because it makes me anxious to not know what everyone else is going to order before I order. I want to make sure I order the right thing. Okay. John Mozeliak is going to freak out about having a singular trade deadline this year because he loves having that extra time. He doesn't have to decide right away. He can step back and see what everyone else is going to do, see what it took to get these pieces that other teams are collecting, and then he can decide what he wants to do with the rest of the season. No such luck this year. I'm going to be very curious because I feel like it is outside of John Mozeliak's comfort zone. He kind of has to, you know, be the first one to place his order and see if anything comes of it. But he's going to be out of his comfort zone. I think it's going to push him to make a decision that he probably doesn't want to make as far as where you go with this team, right? Because by the end of July, you would like to know what your team really has to offer. But we've seen time and time again, somebody make a late season charge in August and September, and all of a sudden they become relevant again by sneaking into the playoffs and then making some noise. John Mozeliak loves that. He lives for that chance to sneak into the playoffs and then make some noise. So this is going to be a chance to sort of back up what he said early in the year about how much this year matters and go for something. But the challenge is, I don't know what the Cardinals have to offer in a trade that's going to generate the sort of return that will make an immediate difference on the major league club. I mean, this isn't a trade one of your spare parts for minor leaguers that may come into play next season kind of year. That's not gonna help them now. It's probably not gonna help them next year either. This is you gotta make a move, probably to trade major league talent in order to get major league talent in return that's going to help you. And I don't know. I mean, it's sort of felt like a resurgent Marcell Ozuna is their biggest trade piece because he was likely to not sign with the Cardinals again next year at this point. I don't know, but he now with him hurt, it sort of eliminates a lot of that value. And you've locked other guys into long-term contracts, and you know, so they're in a weird spot after talking up their flexibility early in the season, and or at least allowing for that conversation to happen, and still trying to say that this year was what their focus was, with what happens next maybe sort of predicated on what happens now. Well, what happens now is they're a 500 team at the All-Star break. They were a 500 team a month ago. They were 20-10 in the first month of the season. So what has happened since then? And, you know, where do you go from here? The rotation has been a concern all along. We talked about Adam Wainwright being the fifth starter and maybe being a big question mark, but we talked about this in the offseason. You can come up with question marks about every single one of the guys in the starting rotation, and surprise, they've all had really bad moments. None of this should be shocking to anyone. So if you're asking me what they should do, what I think they should do, they should have gone out and got a starter to begin with. Then you wouldn't be having to, you know, try to find a way to finagle a trade for an injured outfielder, or, you know, hopefully generate some rebound value on an old pitcher that is on a team that's irrelevant and, you know, isn't going to cost a whole lot. That's sort of the corner it feels like they've painted themselves into.
Yeah, I mean, and the only saving grace is the rest of the division is scuffling just as much. I mean, the Cardinals come into the break, like you said, 44-44, but they're two games out of the division lead. You know, they're sitting in third place. They're half a game out of fourth place, but they are just two games out. And, you know, there's been twice this week where both Chicago and Milwaukee have lost and they haven't taken advantage. So, you know, a game today, if they won today, if they'd been able to, if maybe Kevin Pillar doesn't catch that ball that Goldschmidt hits, that maybe they win this one. And maybe if they'd won one game earlier in the week, you know, maybe that game against Seattle that they lost 5-4, you win those two games and you're in first place at the All-Star break. And, oh, wow, that's, you know, a strange narrative, because this team really doesn't seem to be that good, or at least that consistent enough to be, because they feel like, well, they feel like a 500 team, right? I mean, a team that can go out and win two or three in a row and then lose two out of three. You know, a team that's just never going to, now, you know, we have seen Cardinal teams in the past kick it in the high gear in the second half, and it kind of feels like right now, I don't know, are we going to get the, I think we're somewhat going to get that idea that, you know, if Paul Goldschmidt hitting, you know, as he started to hit this weekend, you know, maybe they'll try to sell that, you know, a resurgent Paul Goldschmidt is just as good as a trade, or a return of Marcell Ozuna, although they were saying today it could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 weeks. That's kind of a lot of difference. But they don't really seem to know, which is always fun. You know, and maybe if he can come back early and, you know, again, if the offense clicks, you could argue that they're going to be better in the second half. But, you know, as you and I were saying, it seems like, you know, as soon as one thing starts working, the other thing starts breaking down. And we've seen that, right? They've had some really good offensive numbers this week, And then they, you know, basically split between Seattle and San Francisco, two teams that are not going to be contenders for trade at the trade deadline. And they were just kind of fortunate to split with those two. I mean, they had they were down two runs in the seventh or eighth inning against the Mariners and happened to rally to come back. So, you know, it feels like even if the offense did start clicking, then you worry if the pitching would just not be good enough to keep up with it. So, you know, I don't necessarily envy John Mozeliak figuring out what he's going to do, but, you know, it doesn't feel like this is a year where you can go trade somebody for a middle reliever and call it good. Because I feel like fan base just isn't going to take that this year.
No, well, I mean, they won't take it well.
Right.
If that's what he does, then, you know, we'll all sort of have to deal with that on our own time, I guess. But I'm hesitant to say that I expect anything different because nothing about this season has been different. Even, you know, he will say that the trades for Paul Goldschmidt and Andrew Miller are significant upgrades, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's different. But if you look back at the last couple of off seasons, you picked up a bat that was supposed to be the difference maker, mm-hmm. and you picked up a reliever that was supposed to be the difference maker. Like, that is the MO for what the Cardinals have done for at least the last three off seasons. Now, has it always been Paul Goldschmidt? Has it always been, well, Andrew Miller, but he hasn't exactly been Andrew Miller of the past, coming off of the injury-riddled season last year. But the point is, you know, I have a hard time expecting him to do anything that's particularly new and fresh because he hasn't yet. They have not deviated from their typical plan in years, and that's mm-hmm. really what feels like part of the problem, is that they're not willing to deviate from that plan. Now, it would have been a deviation from their plan if Giancarlo Stanton had said yes. Right. It would have been a deviation from that plan if, you know, any one of these other options, right? It's not that they haven't necessarily gone after other options. It's that they can't convince those guys to play in St. Louis. So they fall back to this tried and true, we're going to trade for a guy and then try to convince him to stay plan that hasn't really worked as much as they'd like you to believe that it has. And it hasn't worked that well in a while, like since Matt Holliday.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's really what you want to hold up as your, well, we tried, and go after something of similar fashion this year. So I would like to believe that he would do something different because he sees that this year something has to be different, or the heat that he feels now, the negativity that Mike Schilt feels now, boy, is going to ratchet up a few dozen notches if they do nothing and miss the playoffs again after going out and getting Paul Goldschmidt and getting Andrew Miller and still being bad, or at least average, which is not good enough. So it kind of has to be different, but also I won't be shocked if it isn't.
Yeah. Average is about the worst thing this team could be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because if they started to be kind of bad, you know, I mean, they're not likely to sell off, especially not now when they are that close and all that. It can't, I knock on wood, but I don't think they can get so bad in the next two weeks to require a sell-off. But if they were getting bad, you know, you'd start thinking, okay, well, maybe we'll see Randy Arozarena. Maybe we'll see Dylan Carlson. Maybe we'll see Jake Woodford. Maybe we'll see some of these young guys and see what they've got in them. Maybe you could, if Marcell Ozuna was healthy, you could start talking about maybe trading Marcell Ozuna or trading, who knows, even Miles Michaelis. I mean, you signed him to a contract, but, mm-hmm. you know, maybe people would like that because he's like, you know, stuff like that. But they're not. I mean, there are enough in it that you can't start bringing up the farm, but, you know, they're close enough. But then it's like, but can they really put it all together? So it's a dangerous place to be. It's a situation where the Cardinals really don't want to be. But, and I'm not saying they should just go tank, because I don't want that. I'd much rather them be a little bit over 500 than be bad. But from a business point of view, you know, not being able to get those draft picks, but not also not making the playoffs is kind of a death spiral, because you kind of get stuck in this, you know, waiting pool or whatever of currents that go around in circles, but you just can't get. Well, it's like a roundabout. You get stuck in it, and you didn't actually get out of them, you know, at the wrong time. So they can't exit to the playoffs, and they can't exit to good draft picks, and they're kind of stuck. And I'm afraid it's going to take some sort of massive jolt to the system for them to do one or the other, and I don't know what that jolt will be or which way they'll go.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like what needs to happen for this team is for the guys on this roster to start playing like the guys on this roster, mm-hmm. right? Not necessarily, because even if you go out and make a change, if you go out and trade for Madison Bumgarner, if you go out and trade for Marcus Stroman, or, you know, I don't know, pick somebody and bring them into this rotation, thinking that's going to shore it up. If you score 5 runs a game for 4 days and then no runs a game for 6, you're still not going to make the playoffs. So I'm not entirely sure that adding a bat to the lineup or adding a singular pitcher to the rotation is what's going to set this team on fire, right? Like, mm-hmm. I still am not convinced that they're one piece away, and I'm sure that's John Mozeliak's mentality. We hear him say it every year at Blogger Day, is, well, what do you want us to do? It's not like there's a magic bullet, right? There's not a magic bullet here to fix this. Well, no, there's not, because you let it get to this point. Right. And you let it get to this point by doing the same thing over and over and over again. So it almost feels like, and I think I said this last week too, it almost feels like we're kind of stuck with this team. Mm-hmm. And if they want to win, they better figure out how to not be average in the second half, because yep. There is enough talent on this roster to be well above average, especially in a division that is just there for the taking if someone will step up. And the Cardinals have plenty of talent to do it. They just haven't played like it. And that's only so much of that is on management and, you know, ownership and whatever. Yes, you can always do something to make your team better. But if those guys don't hold up their end of the bargain, you're always going to end up looking like you never did enough. And unfortunately, that's the flip side of this, is that while the argument can certainly be made and will continue to be made that John Mozeliak has not done enough, the players haven't really held up their end of the deal either.
Yeah, I mean, it's we've talked, I think, about in the past about whether they're valuing their players right or if they're making the right moves. But, I mean, look, you traded for Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, you didn't expect a guy that's, you know, at least up until recently, was like below average in WRC plus, you know? I mean, you expected a superstar. Maybe he wasn't going to be a superstar 6 years down the road, even though you've extended him that way, but this coming year, there's no reason to think he wasn't going to hit. I mean, Matt Carpenter, sure, you can make the argument that there was reasons to think that Matt Carpenter wouldn't be, I don't think anybody thought he'd be necessarily this bad, but on the downhill slide. But nobody saw this drop-off of Paul Goldschmidt coming. And if Paul Goldschmidt hits like Paul Goldschmidt hits, we're probably talking about a first place team with the way this division is, right? I mean, they would have definitely won 3 more games over the first half with his bat. He just hadn't been there, and so I don't know how you can. I don't think you can fault John Mozeliak for that one. Other moves, yeah, sure. And I'm not saying that. You know, they're fortunate, because if the Cubs or the Brewers were as good as we thought they were at the beginning of the season, even a good Paul Goldschmidt wouldn't have been good enough. But until then, you're right. I don't know. I mean, they very well may just say, look, we're stuck. You're going to have to deal. Y'all are going to have to do it yourself. And I don't know that that's a great message to send to the team, and I don't know that that's the right way to go about it. But I can easily see that, because especially, I mean, you like to say, yeah, there's no silver bullet. Well, that doesn't mean you have to make, you can make more than one move, you know? It's, right. it's not limited to just one thing. But, you know, if there's not, I mean, you know, the Nationals have started to play better, so obviously Max Scherzer's not really on the table, even if he ever was. But, you know, if it's not going to make a move like that or something that's going to be significant, well, it's hard to argue that they should go out and make a couple of incremental moves and just hope that that's enough. When it very well may not be.
Let me ask you this.
No goodness.
Will it be more problematic for the fan base if he goes out and makes the sort of traditional, I'm going to trade for a middling guy that may or may not actually stay on the major league roster kind of thing, even if it's multiple players like that, right? Or if he does nothing. Like, is it better to say, no, this is the team we wanted, this is the team we believe in, they just have to show it? Or to say, well, we'll make a move because we feel like we need to make a move, so here's your move that's not going to change anything? Because just a few weeks ago, he said that basically they've made these moves because they felt pressure to make a move, and it wasn't really anything that they thought was good. Like, he said that out loud. So now if he does that again, is that worse than not making a move?
Yeah, and again, that quote really made no sense because he'd never made a move that affected the major league roster, except for taking people away. But anyway, you know, I guess it depends on how you look at it. From the team's point of view, it may be better not to make a move. From a fan base point of view, boy, I don't know. Because, I mean, John Mozeliak is kind of doomed no matter. I mean, if he doesn't bring in a Max Scherzer, it's like, oh, that's all you did? But if he doesn't do anything, it's like, oh, he can't even do anything. You know, I mean, he's not going, and I'm sure he'll tell us this weekend when we ask him questions at Blogger Day, you know, that he can't win. He's also not going to get a whole lot of sympathy in that regard. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I definitely don't want them to sell off a significant part. I don't want them to trade Nolan Gorman or Dylan Carlson or something like that, unless it's a world-changing kind of a move.
Yeah.
I don't want to see...
Unless it is Max Scherzer?
Right. Basically. Because, you know, I can understand to some degree why they traded Tommy Pham last year. Again, obviously, in hindsight, that's looking really, really bad. But, you know, if you're going to make a move to trade somebody like a Tommy Pham, make it count. And make it count this year. Don't make it count, oh, hopefully this will pay off in 2022. No, you know, it's got to count this year. And if you're going to do that, you can't be trading. I mean, I was going to say you can't be trading for left-handed relievers, but I guess if you went out and got the Will Smith from the Giants that we saw, that might make a bit of a difference. And it might free up Carlos Martinez to go back to the rotation, but that's another story. But it's going to have to be, I mean, I don't know. I just don't think mostly a reliever is not going back, because it's a, you know, the relief corps that the Cardinals have is pretty much the one thing that is working for the most. I mean, it hits its bumps here and there, and you could probably replace Tyler Webb without much difficulty. But, you know, that's what's working. Don't tinker with what's working. Go fix the stuff that's not. I know it's easier to find a reliever, but, you know,
especially one that doesn't cost you much.
Exactly. But, you know, they are paid to make some hard choices. And so far, I think that's the thing we haven't seen, right? We haven't seen a trade that felt like a hard choice in a long while. The Goldschmidt trade was spare parts. Even though Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly have done very well out in Arizona, it was spare parts for the Cardinals. You know, they traded Tommy Pham because they wanted to free up a spot for Harrison Bader, which is a questionable reason. But it wasn't a hard trade for them because that's what they wanted to do. And Luke Voigt the same way. They haven't sacrificed, I don't feel like, a significant... Even the Marcell Ozuna trade, the four pieces there, nobody felt like that was a significant sacrifice for the Cardinals. Now, they've cut into their depth. They would probably like to have a Zach Gallen or a Sandy Alcantara right now. But, you know, they haven't traded a Nolan Gorman type. They haven't traded even like Colton Wong. I'm not saying that they should trade Colton because I don't want to be shot, but you know,
even, I will see you this weekend.
Yeah, I know. Let's say Harrison Bader. But that idea that this guy that has value to this team has, you know, his defense is huge and he has some offensive potential, but you know, are you willing to roll the dice and say, he's not going to get better for us, we're going to get something out of him? Even though this is going to hurt us in the short, you know, in this area, we're going to get better in this area. And I just don't feel that they've had to make a call like that since, Oh boy, I'd have to really look. I mean, you know, honestly, something that stands out, the last one that really stands out, and I'm sure there's some since then without having to really look, is the Colby Rasmus trade. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a trade that hurt because they wanted to get those pieces, and even then they had this idea that things weren't going to work with Colby in St. Louis. But yeah, I don't know of a trade where it's like, boy, I'm, you know, just not sure we won this trade, or even if we get a good, even, you know, it's just this one's going to hurt us. You know, I'm sure they have those kind of feelings, but on the outside looking in, I don't know when that was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're trading guys, like, I think the Stephen Piscotty trade on a different level was a little bit like that, but there were additional circumstances where everyone was kind of like, look, this isn't really what we want to do, but here's what we're going to do. But, you know, Randall Grichuk, I mean, I think that was more just a disappointment because he didn't turn out to be what John Mozeliak thought he was going to be in that trade. And I'm trying to think, for the most part, the other trades that they've made outside of Tommy Pham have been minor leaguers or guys that couldn't break the starting lineup with the major league team. So it's not like they've traded, you know, their everyday left fielder for the starting pitcher that's going to carry them to the playoffs. Like, that kind of trade doesn't happen under this regime, at least not, I mean, I have the worst memory in the history of the world, but you're probably, I mean, the Colby Rasmus trade is the one that jumps out as like, oh, this is a thing that they're doing. At the time, it felt like to get him away from Tony La Russa, which is, you know, maybe not what the impetus should be for a trade like that. But nonetheless, it ended up working out for them because the pieces they got in return were extremely instrumental in carrying them to, obviously, the World Series championship that year. But I don't think they probably knew that at the time those were going to be the most significant pieces in particularly the bullpen to carry them that far. So, yeah, it's not the risk versus reward scale seems to tip very, very dramatically into the safe zone most of the time. And you know what? That's great. It's probably fine and maybe even good for, like, the bottom line of your business. But at the same time, yeah, you get a lot more fans coming in and out, you know, if you give them a couple extra weeks of baseball in the fall, particularly when it's, you know, significant postseason games that they get to take advantage of. So it's the risk management side of what this front office has done that seems to be a constant problem in their ability to evaluate talent correctly and their ability to evaluate, you know, potential value from other talent, or, you know, balancing the scales of here's what it's going to cost us, but here's what could happen in return. And then every once in a while, taking the risk, right? Like, it doesn't always work out. See Paul Goldschmidt. It didn't work out, maybe, but you're two games out of the division lead after a 500 first half. Like, there is plenty of room to make a splash and go after something that may or may not work, but then, you know, you start over and figure it out from there. That tendency just doesn't exist with this team.
Yeah. I realized I need to go. I've got all those John Mozeliak trades written up on the site, so I'll have to dig through those and see if there's anything. I did find, looks like 2013. That's the David Freese trade. That might be one.
Okay.
I mean, you front Freese and Salas. And Freese was, you know, he'd had a rough 13, but, you know, he's still David Freese.
Yeah.
And you got Borges and Grichuk back, which is a deal that, on the face of it, they probably won. Looking at the WAR, I mean, Grichuk put up a decent amount of WAR for the Cardinals. But still, not exactly. It didn't pan out quite the way they thought it was going to. So I don't know. All right. Well, you know, again, the Cardinals are what the Cardinals are. And, you know, it kind of feels like we've kind of thought and said the same thing the last 3 or 4 weeks. But we appreciate anybody that's continuing to listen to it. Tara and I will be in St. Louis this weekend. We will be at the annual Blogger Day, which typically has been more of an April-May thing. So it's going to be very interesting to see how John Mozeliak addresses us, or what the questions are for Mo when you're going into a right before the trade deadline with a disappointing team. Mo might get a little sick before he comes in to see us and send somebody else in. But, you know, I still haven't figured out why he hasn't passed that off to Gersh yet. So, you know, this may be the year that he does that. But anyway, Tara and I should be back with you. Probably not next Sunday, but we'll find a time. Maybe we'll do a crossover with Alan and Meet Me as Usual, and we'll talk about all the stuff that we learned at UCB weekend and the week after. But we'll find a time. We'll be back with you then as the second half kicks off. So until then, that's Tara and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.